Major General Richards, Reel 5.
At the 4th Battalion at Catterick, what equipment did you have?
We had we had what they call Vickers tanks. They were our medium tanks, Vickers, which carried a, I think it was a, not quite sure, but I think it was a 2-pounder gun and machine gun. And the Vickers tanks, but otherwise they know nothing about them, really. They were just armed with a machine gun and a 2-pounder, I think it was.
What did you think of them?
Oh, they're no use for war, because they were just merely the armor plating, three or three would penetrate them, I should think. Quite useless. They're never intended for war, I don't think. They were just intended for training. Anybody who thought they were any use for war gone mad, I think.
You thought that at the time, did you?
Oh, yeah. Quite useless.
Would you say that was their main deficiency?
Oh, yes. Yes, I think so. I mean, the armor plating was quite useless, really. They're all experimental vehicles, really, I think they were. I mean, for instance, whilst we're up there, we had a one-man tank, which was produced by, I forget my own name soon.
Martel.
Martel, it was. It was called the Martel tank. And it was a one-man business, you see. Well, you can't fight a tank with one man. It's stupid. You've got to drive it and fire a gun and all that kind of thing like that. Anyway, it was experimental, and from a training point of view, it was quite useful.
Did you train in it?
We trained. We had a company of them or something.
Did you actually yourself drive one?
No, oh, I did one, yes, but I didn't command anyone. I was adjutant at the time.
What were they like to drive, those things?
Oh, quite easy to drive. Quite easy. And the trouble was, I think they were easily turned over and things like that, because they're very short wheelbase.
Did you have accidents like that with them, turning over?
Well, I can't.
What were some of the problems you encountered driving the Vickers medium? The sort of mechanical problems you had. You remember?
No, I don't think we had any serious mechanical problems at all with them. No, I can't think of anything out of the ordinary. Just normal maintenance problems. But I think they're fairly easy to drive. The trouble was, in my case, and several others, I mean, you've got, if you're enclosed in these things and going over bouncy ground, one would get, I very often was seasick, because you're bouncing about the whole time, if you're enclosed. So otherwise, I had no problems.
People were quite regularly sick, were they?
Well, I was, for one, anyway. Whether the others were or not, I don't know.
What was your sort of daily routine up in Catterick?
Well, the daily routine was rather like any other unit one. A good deal of maintenance done on tanks. You had a certain number of drill parades. You had various inspections. And in the afternoons, one usually played games of some nature or something, or cross-country run, something like that. Most people were kept fairly employed.
Did you have to supervise the maintenance, did you?
I didn't supervise the maintenance. You had a technical officer to do that. You had a technical agent in the battalion, and his job was to supervise the maintenance. I was agent of the battalion, and I did mostly of the non-technical administration.
Those drills you mentioned, what kind of things would be done there?
Well, you would have tank drill, and you'd have ordinary foot drill, like anybody else. Try and teach the people marching forward in order and so on, just type of things like that.
You did quite a bit of that in the tank corps, did you?
Well, just a certain amount, yeah.
Didn't
we used to insist upon people going up to the tank lines from their barracks. They'd have to march there and back and things like that. Have them slouching about.
Didn't people feel that, well, they were in tanks, so it didn't matter?
I don't think so, no. Oh, I don't think so. I have no idea. I don't think so, anyway. That's part of the routine, I think. I mean, really, we had a lot of people in the tanks who used to join us. They couldn't even ride a bicycle. An amazing number. I ran a course there once for motorcycles. We had a certain number of motorcycles. We ran a course and we said to everybody, must learn to ride a motorcycle. Well, the time came and so on, we had to get bicycles, teach them to ride bicycles to start with. It's really rather interesting, seeing that it's supposed to be a mechanized corps.
But this was the other ranks, was it, or officers as well?
I think all the officers could ride bicycles, yes. I don't think there was any difference about that. But there were a percentage of the men not being able to ride bicycles.
What sort of mechanical standard were they, the men?
Oh, some of them very good. Some of them, on the mechanical side, they especially, we had our own fitters and people like that. And on the mechanical side, I should say they were good.
Was all the maintenance done at Catterick yourselves, was it?
All our maintenance was done in Catterick. The heavy maintenance, like changing a gearbox or changing an engine, things like that, was done in the central workshops, which was, I think, REOC, I'm not quite sure. I've forgotten now.
How was the 4th Battalion organised
We had three companies, and each company had four sections. And each section consisted of four tanks.
And your particular job at Catterick was actual administrative adjutant, were you?
I was adjutant, yeah.
What sort of exercises were done?
We did our tactical exercises, like any other unit. Tactical exercises without troops or officers and senior NCOs took place in the countryside. We'd go out for the whole day and do the exercises. And we would occasionally, in the training season, we would probably do, you would start off with section exercises with the men, and you work up from section exercises to company exercises, and then you do battalion exercises. Until you came, employing everybody, of course, until you came to brigade or divisional exercise. And we probably finish up the season with two or three divisional exercises. We had the 5th Division with us at the time.
On those, first of all, those exercises, tactical ones in the sand, what kind of things were you actually doing? What sort of things were you...
We hardly ever did any sand exercises. We just went out in the countryside and did our tactical exercises with our troops, which just made up schemes and enemy landing on the Yorkshire coast, shall I say, or something like that, and got to repel him. That's the type of stuff we did. We had our second command at the time was who became General Hubbard Hobart. Spelt that way, pronounced Hubbard, and he used to take us out on lots of tactical exercises, and there were no sinecure at all. I mean, you start out at 9 o'clock in the morning, and you probably get back about 10 o'clock at night. Serious work.
Was he exceptional for that?
Oh yes, I think he was. Yes, yes.
What sort of things were you doing with him then that took so long?
Well, the type of thing you did was the enemy are holding that hill, what are you going to do to get him off, shall I say? And things like that. Or you're holding the hill and the enemy attacking from that direction. Well, what disposition are you going to take up? All those things. You meet a river and you say, how are you going to get across this river with the other enemy the other side? And just exercise that nature. You just sat down with three or four, you sit down together, formed into small syndicates, and you work out your solution.
Would you work it out on paper, would you, for him?
You'd just work it out. You wouldn't work it out on paper. You'd work it out between yourselves, and then you'd pick one of your syndicate to give the solution. Half an hour's time, or whatever you're allowed to do it, probably an hour's time or 2 hours' time, depending on how much reconnoitering you had to do. And then there'd be a, at the end of it all, you'd hear the staff solution to it all. That was the end of that.
By the staff solution, that usually meant Hobbards, was it?
Yeah.
Yeah. What did you think of him as a technical sort of, from that point of view, from a tactician?
Oh, he's very good, very good. The trouble was a lot of these people were far before their time, don't you? I mean, you know better than I do. The excellent fellow Fuller got sacked because he was far before his time. And they finished him up by giving him Bombay District, where all he'd see was somebody on their feet and no tanks at all. So he reckoned he wasn't taking that on. He left the army. And Hubbard was just the same, and we had three or four. Little Hart was always there. And so.
Little Hart came up to see you when you were there, didn't
he? Oh, yeah. He used to come around quite often. Seen quite a lot of him.
Did you know him? Did you meet him?
Oh, yes.
What did you think of this journalist coming like that at the time?
Oh, we didn't even didn't even think he was writing a book, really. We had no idea. I mean, he was just came along just to see how we're getting on and discuss the situation and things like that. I don't think any of us had any idea about him putting anything in print or anything.
He came, what, as a friend of Hubbard's, did he?
Well, he came as a friend of the tanks. He was a friend of anybody who likes to talk about mechanization. He was quite prepared to talk about it.
How did Hubbard get on with people at this period? Was he...
Oh, he was always a bit prickly, you know. Very prickly fellow. And so on. Unfortunately, he didn't get on with the commanding officer at all because, for instance, in those days, we had brevet promotions. And he was a brevet full colonel, whilst the commanding officer was a lieutenant colonel.
Yeah. I'm not quite clear on that one.
No, I don't suppose you are. I'm not surprised. But you could, in the army, be major. Your substantive rank, and you can brevet lieutenant colonel or brevet colonel or whatever you like if you've got rapid promotion. But that did not give you preference in the unit over a fellow who was a commanding officer. So one had, in the fourth tanks, we had lieutenant colonel Festing commanding and Colonel Hubbard, second in command. And then when Colonel Festing would go on holiday, he would command the unit, you see. Or when sometimes, it happened once or twice, when the brigade commander went on holiday, Colonel Hubbard would command the brigade over Colonel Festing because he's a brevet full colonel. But it's no use going into all those things because... just this army promotion before the war.
But this caused friction between them, did it?
Well, it's very difficult to avoid friction, I should say.
When you did your exercises with the tanks themselves, what were the kind of tactics that you were training? What were you doing?
Well, our main tactics in the 4th Battalion were just tanks in support of infantry. That's the basic training that we had to do. We didn't do any of the independent row, which was practiced on the Salisbury Plain. Our job was to support the infantry in the attack and defense. And we used to preach the thing, which I think is probably still stands good today, that the tank dealt with a machine gun, which was the enemy of the infantry, and the infantry and the gunners dealt with the anti-tank gun, which was the enemy of the tank. And on that basis, you worked out your tactics.
How would that work out in practice? You went ahead of the infantry, did you, in these
days? Oh, well, that depends. I mean, it depends whether it's night or day or all kinds of things like that. You see. Depends on the visibility and depends on the ground. So many local factors have to decide that. But at night, for instance, I practiced it when I was commanding a brigade on the desert. When at night the infantry would go forward, and at first light the tanks would follow them, and at first light they would be supporting the infantry on their objective. But it's no use sending a tank in the dark by itself.
So for almost all these exercises like that, you were working with an infantry battalions with you?
Either in practice or in theory, one of the two.
How did you sort of get on with them? With the
infantry? Very well indeed. Very well. We had a lot of them there. A lot of the head of the 5th Division. East Lancashire Regiment, the Middlesex Regiment, the Leicesters. Quite a number of them, I can remember.
What did they think of the tank corps?
No idea. Probably not very much. I don't know.
What did you consider that you were being used correctly at the time as a tank battalion?
Oh yes, we did. Yes, well, that was our that was what we laid down. It was our ideas. We didn't get any directive from anywhere else, I don't think. That was our idea. General Fuller was there, and we probably got a lot of ideas from him, I don't know. I was too junior for that. And Hubbard was there, of course. So I just don't know.
Did you meet Fuller?
Oh, yeah. Fuller was commanding a brigade of infantry at the time in Kettering.
What did you think of him at the time?
Oh, he was first class from our point of view because, I mean, his ideas and our ideas coincided.
Did he used to come over and talk to you?
Oh, yeah. Oh, saw a lot of him. He lives at a place called Hipswell Lodge in Catholic. You know, we had a lot of dealings with him.
Do you remember when you did these joint exercises, any particular incidents that happened during them while you were sort of working with Catholic?
I can't think of anything offhand, to tell you the truth. Nothing very offhand. We were doing one exercise with General Fuller. He's a brigadier then, of course. We attacked an object, attacked an objective which was given to us. And General Fuller was commanding the brigade, which we ran. He had some guns in support, and he was shelling the objective at the same time as we arrived on it. And so General the divisional commander, General Kirk, criticized him on this point and so on. And he said, well, he didn't consider that as a criticism at all because they were doing the tanks no harm. And they'd kept the enemy's heads down whilst we got on the objective. But that's the only specific exercise I remember.
On any of those with the 4th Battalion, did you work with the Air Force or...?
No.
How were you communicating? What sort of means of communication were you using?
Flag, usually. Flag, we had no wireless.
Did you feel that this was effective?
Oh, no. I mean, it never was. I mean, we used it in the First World War, a flag between ourselves and so on, and waters. Pretty crude, but it's better than nothing. And no, we didn't get any radio until we got onto the Salisbury plain. I should think probably 32 or 33 or 34 or 35, sometime like that.
There was a feeling, though, that you were badly off from that point of view, was there?
Yes, well, of course. Radio hadn't come into it there. It's very questionable whether it was on anything at all. I suppose it was invented, I don't know. But, you see, if you had radio on a tank or in a tank or something like that, the insulation to get any speech at all would be very tricky. And when we got on the plane, you got awful interference from your own tank, from other tanks and everything like that, trying to get anything through.
What was the sort of state of morale in the tank corps at that time, would you say?
Oh, I thought very high. We never had any difficulty in getting recruits. We were always up to strength.
How would you say that compared with the other arms? Well, the infantry, you will...
Yes, well, it's awfully difficult to say because, I mean, I was a very junior officer, really, and you don't see beyond your own local horizon. I think I don't think they got the recruits they wanted by any means. I may be wrong. I think the poor chaps went around with green flags representing anti-tank guns and a yellow flag representing a machine gun and probably a green flag representing a platoon with about 2 men in it instead of about 20.
But a tank corps was able to select top quality.
We got our own people. So much so that... they put a height limit on us. Nobody under something like 5'4" they put this limit on us for recruiting so that we couldn't take any small fellow. We had to take all the big chaps, which was the idea of preventing a lot of fellows coming to the regiment. But the snag was, of course, we didn't want the big chaps, we wanted the small chaps. And they ought to put the thing on the other way, but that was nothing to do with me.
Well, so you were getting fairly tall people coming in?
We were getting big chaps, you see, and ought to be in the guards or something like that.
Didn't this create problems for getting them in and out of tanks, didn't it?
Didn't help at all, really, because you're always very cramped in a tank in any case. The smaller person is, the better, very often.
One thing I didn't ask you about the exercises, did you do any gunnery exercises, you know, at the battalion level?
Oh, yes. Went up to... used to annually go up to do our firing exercises up at... I forget the name of the ranges in Northumberland. Went every year up there. The ranges were... Oh, memory against the Reedsdale ranges. And each company would go up there for about 3 weeks to a month to do all their firing on open ranges.
What kinds of things were you doing up there?
or just firing at targets, stationary targets, moving targets, various ranges.
When you mention moving, we're actually firing on the move. What
sort of target be moving, and you would be moving.
What sort of standard do you think that you had? Time?
Oh, I think very satisfactory. I should thought. We had no aids at all. I mean, we just had to. You hadn't got any stabilizers or anything like that. You had to work and do all the stabilizing yourself. So really, I probably with the weapons we had produced very satisfactory results.
Do you remember any sort of proportion out of hits or anything like that?
No, I don't remember any of that. I don't know what the standard was. They had to pass a certain standard before they qualified. And there was a competition right throughout the regiment for the best shooting section, so on, things like that.
Who won that usually? Or was
oh, I just did. I can't remember.
Who would be doing the instruction for that? That would be...
Oh, you know, the section officer, the officer in charge of this section. He'd do the gunnery and so on. We didn't have a special gunnery officer. We just had your own company commander and your own officers.
Even when you went up on the ranges?
Oh, yeah.
Your own job as adjutant, did you enjoy doing that kind of work, was it?
Yes, I did. I enjoyed it. It's so much depends on your commanding officer, how you get on and so on, whether you fit in with him or not, and so on. It's a job that is selected by the commanding officer. He selects his own adjutant and so on. On the whole, it's an interesting job because you see the whole thing on a broader perspective.
What in particular were you doing? What sort of things?
Well, you dealt with the discipline of the battalion. You dealt with all the kind of pay business and everything concerning the soldier, really. You had a quartermaster who did all the clothing. He was responsible to you, really, for that. And he did all the clothing and the things like looking after the rations and the coal and things like that. But there were an awful lot of paperwork to be done, really, such as getting when you're getting more recruits up and things like that, and people doing being discharged and all that business, promotions and so on, all come through your hands.
What was discipline like?
Very good, I thought. Very good. No trouble at all.
Could you judge that in any sort of comparison with other units or other arms, rather?
No, I don't think I can. No, I think the discipline was good throughout the army. We never had any trouble. I don't think there was any trouble in Kettrick anyway. I remember I went on one or two expeditions on the general strike in 1926. We went up to Chesley Street and all around the Durham coal fields and so on. We never had any trouble.
What's they doing patrol work for you?
We're just showing the flag. Kind of super police work.
What, in armoured cars, was that? No, that would be tanks.
Actually, we use armoured cars for that.
What, you mentioned promotion. Did you feel that in the tank corps that it was very slow?
Well, it was slow throughout the army. You see, that's the snare. It was very slow throughout the army. There was hardly any promotion at all. I was a subaltern for 12 years. You see, now you become a captain after five, I think, and a major after, I forgot what, and so on. But promotion very slow, people didn't worry. Slow throughout the army. One fellow I was at Santos with, I know, did 17 years as a subaltern. Well, didn't encourage you to soldier very long.